Mr. Blackwell asked me to take this class because I had done quite a bit of study on this subject before. And I don't know if he made any comment about it ahead of time that I might be here or not. Did he say anything about that? I see. Well, he told me that, or asked me rather, if I would go through Ezekiel 40 through 48. I presume you'd come up through chapter 39. Is that what has happened, or was this just a convenient time to... Everybody speaks, but everybody nods, so I guess... I see. He didn't complete 37? Well, he only told me chapter 40, so he can take care of the last part of 37 and 38 and 39 and whatever. I did cover the subject of Ezekiel in a Bible study here some time ago. Of course, with that, you know, we flew low and fast and just hit some of the high points is all. So tonight maybe we'll have a chance to spend a little more time in the chapters, since I understand we have about 2 hours' time, unless I run out of steam before that time. And whenever we get through, we'll quit, unless there are questions. Now, he asked me to do this here just a couple days ago, at least seemed like it was a couple days ago. I guess it was on the Sabbath when he asked me about it. And I have not had time to study this as much as I would like in the interim. And even though I've skimmed over it, I've not looked at it real carefully and specifically. And so some things may be a little faint in my memory, because it was 20 years ago that I made a very detailed study of this particular section of Ezekiel and wrote a thesis on that subject at that particular time. And so some of these things, you know, in my mind are going to be 20 years old. So I hope you'll forgive me if I stammer around a little bit. But probably would have some ideas and some points that you might not have understood, or at least not in the way that you'll understand them now. When you come to this particular part of the Bible, it's a part of the Bible, I think, that some people read the same way they read the sections in the Bible. You know, so-and-so begat so-and-so, and then he begat so-and-so, and he begat so-and-so, and he begat so-and-so, and about that time, you're ready to turn to another chapter. And I think sometimes this section of the Bible also, at least in part, is just about like that. You know, it doesn't mean very much to you, unless you start to put it down on paper. And I'd like to ask if any of you have, maybe a lot of you have any of you tried to put down on paper what you read here? We have one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, well, quite a few of you have. Okay. I'm glad at least quite a few of you were curious enough to do that. My study took at least a year's time, and I wrote about a 200-page thesis, as well as made quite a few drawings on the subject. All right, so let's start out in chapter 40, and some of it we'll maybe go over carefully, and some of it maybe we'll just skip over. In the 25th year of our captivity, which was around 571, and I don't remember whether I said 570 or 571 in the class, the Bible study we had some time ago. But it was around that time. In other words, about 14 years after Jerusalem had been destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar's forces. Because, you see, Ezekiel had been taken captive quite some time before that. So this is about 14 years after that. And by the way, I'll be reading quite a bit in the Jewish translation, and some in the Revised Standard Version tonight. In the beginning of the year, and of course the beginning of the year from God's point of view is in the spring. The Jews, however, the beginning of the year to them was in the fall. But this was written by a Levite, a priest, Ezekiel. And I would think he would take the biblical method of reckoning rather than the Jewish civil method. So this was in the month, rather, we would say, of Nisan, or Abib, in the 10th day of the month. I don't know if there's significance to this, but there was a particular thing that took place anciently on this day. Anyone remember what it was? The lamb was selected. Now, I have no idea if there's any significance here, but I just want to point it out. It was the 14th year after the city was smitten, and the hand of God was upon him. I'll just sort of summarize some of these things. And he brought me thither or there or over to Jerusalem. But remember now, the city was destroyed at this time. The temple was destroyed at this particular time, and yet here was Ezekiel in spirit in Jerusalem. Now, obviously, he is carried far forward as far as the time is concerned to the millennial period. Well, it could even be later than the millennial period, but we might say either the millennial period or the judgment period that follows. Sometime during that time now, he is in vision. So he's in the visions of God. He came into the land of Israel. He doesn't call it the land of Judah, which it had been called when Ezekiel had been in the land. And he set me down upon a very high mountain. And then he said to the south was this city, or something that looked like a city. And he saw a man whose appearance was such and such. I think I'll skip over that. And then in verse 5, and he says, behold, there was a wall on the outside of the house. Now, he calls it a house, and sometimes this term is used, or this word is used differently, referring to the temple building and sometimes the whole complex. Anyway, there was a wall that went all around this particular area that looked like a city. And there was a man who had a measuring reed of 6 cubits long. And Ezekiel here pauses to emphasize or to explain that this is a little different than the cubit that is commonly known. And he says this is a cubit and a handbreadth. Now, there have been a lot of lengths of cubits mentioned historically in antiquity. And for that matter, even as far as the Bible is concerned, so you'll read, for example, about an 18-inch cubit. Once in a while, you'll read about a 21.6-inch cubit. Rather rarely, you will also hear of, I think it's a 14.4. I didn't write these down ahead of time. This just come now from 20 years back. I think it's 14.4 or something like that. And then on a rare occasion, you might read about a 25.2-inch cubit. So those are several different lengths of cubits. But this particular one, he says, was a cubit and a handbreadth. You see, this is a... this is a palm, I guess, and this is... Well, I think that it's really the breadth of a hand, not the span. Anyway, this particular distance... generally is considered 3.6 inches. Now, all of those figures that I mentioned are multiples of 3.6 inches, if you will check them out if I gave you the right figures. But anyway, he says, now this is a cubit and a hand breadth. In other words, there was a cubit that was known, but this one is a little longer than that. You see, it's a hand breadth longer, 3.6 inches. And you'll also notice... the largest, let's take the smallest figure, 14.4, I think it was. Is that the right figure? That would be four, wouldn't it? Yeah, four hand breadths. Now, that's rather rarely used. Then five would be the 18.0, would it not? I think that's it. And then six would be 21 point whatever it was. And then 7 would be 25.2. What I concluded was that this particular cubit, which is also called the cubit according to the ancient measure when you read about it in Chronicles, was the longer one, the 7 hand breadths rather than 6. It would seem logical also that down in Babylon they used 6 and God used 7. Now those figures also, if you're interested, have other significance possibly, and that is that those are both figures that we're very familiar with. One of the decimal places maybe might be in a different place. You've all heard of 360, and you've all heard of 2520, haven't you? which seems to possibly have a relationship to this. All right, so anyway, this is roughly, in other words, 2 feet. Now, it's a little over 2 feet. It's 1.2 inches more than 2 feet, but just in round figures, when you would see a cubit of this kind, it's 2 feet. And 6 cubits, that's 12 feet. So this man has a rod now that's 12 feet long, and he goes around measuring things with this rod. And that will give you now sort of an idea of the sizes that he's talking about. Where others would say maybe the cubit was 18.0 inches, a foot and a half, you see, I'm saying it's really over 2 feet. At least this particular cubit. There are other cubits used for different purposes. In fact, as you look into the history of it, you'll find that there were certain cubits used in measuring a house, other cubits for land measurements, and then there's also a royal cubit, which I think that this one would probably be called that. So he has this rod about 12 feet long that he's going to measure all of this, and he measured the breadth of the building one reed, or 6 cubits, 12 feet, and the height is the same. Now, when he mentions the breadth of the building, you think, well, here's a building that is 12 feet wide, but that's not what he's talking about. What is it that he's talking about here, this 12 feet? Anyone like to say? The wall. The wall's 12 feet thick. Have you ever seen a wall 12 feet thick? You don't see them very often, do you? And the height of the wall is 12 feet. And he says he came to the gate which looks towards the east. Now there are 6 gates that are mentioned. This is the east gate. And when he starts to take you on this tour of this millennial temple, if I can use that particular term, he enters at the logical place, the gate. And he describes the gate, then he describes something else, and so on and so forth. Now here is a typical gate, as I tried to figure it out. I wish there was a pointer here. Maybe someone could look around and see if there's a pointer somewhere I might point out certain things. Okay, so what he is doing now, this is now facing the east, the eastern gate of the temple. In other words, west would be this direction, and east would be this direction. That's not the way things are normally oriented. Maybe I should turn it around the other direction. So you enter here, and what he's told you is that this is 12 feet thick here, and this wall is 12 feet high. Then he went up the steps thereof, out here, and later on we'll find how many steps there are. Probably we'll note it, but just in case I overlook it, there are 7 steps that lead up there to the that particular gate. And he measured the jamb of the gate, 1 reed broad, and the other jamb, 1 reed broad. So in other words, both of them were the same. The jambs were the same thickness as the wall. And every cell was 1 reed long. Now here are the cells here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Or chambers, rooms, whatever you want to say. And then there are also some little side rooms, apparently, that are involved, too. And every cell was 1 reed long, 1 reed broad. And then the space between the cells was 5 cubits. Which I think would maybe relate to this mark. Well, that's a little confusing there, the A thing there, arches. We'll see that a little bit later. And the word arches is, I think, a mistranslation when you come to understand what the word came from. Let's see. And then he mentioned the jambs of the gate by the porch of the gate within were 1 reed. Now he's talking about this area up here, the porch area. He measured also the porch of the gate toward the house. Now the house here is talking about the temple. This faces towards the temple building itself. Then he measured the porch of the gate, which was 8 cubits, and the posts thereof, 2 cubits, and the porch of the gate was inward. All right, so he's just saying again that the porch was on the inside of this area. Now, I'm going to skip over some of this. He mentions the 25 cubits, door against door. In other words, 25 cubits from here to here, if I recall correctly. They were opposite each other, so there was door against door there. And from the forefront of the gate of the entrance into the forefront of the inner porch, was 50 cubits. From here to up there would be, I believe, 50 cubits. And then he mentions about windows to the cells, or these little rooms. And then also he mentions about the arches again. And let's come now to verse 17. And he brought me into the outer court. So now you go through, you come in here, you go through there, and there's a walkway apparently there, and then straight ahead is the outer court. But then there are other buildings to the right and left of this, and we'll see this a little bit later when I show you another drawing. So he brought me into the outer court, and lo, there were chambers and a pavement, and he says there were 30 chambers, or 30 rooms, upon the pavement, and they were by the side of the gates, corresponding to the length of the gates. In other words, they are the width of the gate. Then he measured other things here, and then we come in verse 20, now to the gate of the outer court that looks towards the north. I suppose this was, at least to start out with, this is the eastern gate, but now there's a northern gate, identical to this, only it's turned towards north. This is turned towards the east, the first one at least. So now we have all of this repeated over again, in some cases almost word for word. And notice in verse 22, one point here, it says, it was ascended by seven steps. Now, in verse 24, and he led me towards the south, and then there was a gate again identical to this. So now we have three gates entering into this temple area, one to the east, one to the north, and one to the south. And the only difference is they're turned in different directions. Now, verse 28, and he brought me to the inner court by the south gate. So now he's talking about another series of gates. Again, identical, but these now are reversed in direction. Where the port here is toward the inside, these others are turned around exactly the opposite of that. And now the porch is towards the outside instead of the inside. They're reversed. So he measured the south gate according to these measures and describes that. And there were arches round about and so on. And when you think of an arch, you know, you think of something that is semicircular. And I don't know why all the translations use the word arch here. At least I think nearly all of them use the arch. But when you look up the word, it's Elim, or Elim, E-L-I-M, we spell it. And you look back in the Old Testament and you find that that has reference to palm trees. How was it? They came to a place in the wanderings of the children of Israel, to a place and there were 70 palm trees, wasn't there? And they called it Elim, or Elim, apparently because they were slender, tall trees. It doesn't have anything to do with an arch as we think of it at all. Now, you might find arches in the Vatican, but I don't think you're going to find any arches in the temple. God just didn't use that kind of architecture. So it's rather misleading when they use this word arches, which is not a very good translation of the original. And notice verse 31, and the arches thereof were toward the outer court, and the palm trees were upon the posts thereof. And now the going up had eight steps. So when you go to the inner court, there are eight steps. Seven out here, but when you go to the inner ones, there are eight steps. Now verse 35, and he brought me to the north gate, and he's now talking about the inner court, and I'll show you now a drawing of all of this, so you put all of this together. And verse 37, the posts thereof were toward the outer court. As I mentioned, or the post, or the perch, or the porch rather, and all of that now are toward the outer court when you're talking about the inner three gates. Now, before we go any further, I think maybe I should show you some other, I should show you some other drawings here. Because all of this is just a floor plan. Now I'd like to show you what it looks like, at least by line drawing. Okay, now that's a perspective drawing, giving you sort of an angle. And you see over here the entry with the seven steps, or eight steps if it's an inner court. And over here you have what is called the porch, and it mentions in one place that it was 60 cubits high. In other words, about 120 feet high, this back part. And then these other things were posts, or actually I think in the way it is in here, they're called arches. I would call them towers, or pillars, or whatever, which they call arches. Okay, I guess that's enough of that for the moment. Let's go on now in verse 38. And there was a chamber with the entry thereof by the post at the gates. Now this is at the north gate, the north inner gate, where the burnt offering was to be washed. And so now in this little section, starting about verse 38 through about verse 46, it describes where the animals were prepared for the sacrifice. And it gives quite some detail about that. It tells you, for example, in verse 39, that there were two tables on this side and two tables on that side. So as you go in that particular gate, there are two tables on one side of the entry and two on the other side. And that's where they slay the burnt offering and the sin offering and the guilt offering. And on the one side, without, as one goes up to the entry of the gate towards the north, were two tables. And then there were four tables beside that, on each side. Eight tables whereupon to slay the sacrifices. Moreover, there were four tables for the burnt offering of hewn stone. And he gives the size here. It's a cubit and a half long. In other words, about 3 feet long and 3 feet broad and 1 foot or 2 feet high. To lay the instruments, and it describes a little bit about that. And verse 44, without the inner gate were chambers for the guard in the inner court, which was at the side of the north gate. And so that there were other chambers to the side of this, which I'll be showing you a little bit later. And their prospect, or that is, they face south. One at the east gate having the prospect towards the north. And then he tells us that this is for the sons of Zadok. In verse 46. Now, anciently, during the time of David, there were two priestly families. One was the family of Abiathar, and the other was the family of Zadok. And if you'll read carefully the story of David, and also of Solomon, but more particularly of David, you will see that Abiathar was not faithful, but the family of Zadok was. And so as a result of that, and maybe there's a later fulfillment as well, but at least the one family remained faithful, the other was not. So now God says that the sons of Zadok are the ones that are going to come near to God to minister to him because of that faithfulness. You'll see that a little bit later. Verse 47, and he measured the court 100 cubits long, 100 cubits broad, in other words, about 200 feet in each direction. Four square, and this is talking now about the area, the inner court, out in front of the temple building. And I don't have now the overall picture yet to show you. We'll come to that a little bit later. I'm trying to do this as logically as I can, but I realize there will be some confusion as we go along. All right, now starting in verse 48, he says, and he brought me to the porch of the house. Now we're getting to the temple building itself. You see, you might say, entered in the east gates, and then made some detours to the north gate, to the south gate, and then we went around to the north gate, the inner gate, and have gone through that, through the court, the inner court, and now we are approaching the temple itself. All right, so he brought me to the porch of the house. That's this part right out here. This is just now, so far, just the floor plan. And actually, most of the description you find in the book of Ezekiel is a floor plan. He doesn't tell you very much about the vertical dimensions. He just tells you mainly about the horizontal dimensions. You know, like you'd go into a house and you'd measure it and have a floor plan without measuring how high the walls are or the architecture particularly. In fact, when you really want to understand Ezekiel, if you're really intent on that, you also have to study the temple called Solomon's Temple, which you'll find mentioned in quite a bit of detail in Kings and also in Chronicles. You'll even find some things about it in the book of Jeremiah. You'll also find a little bit about the next temple, which might be a little enlightening, in the book of Ezra. But anyway, he says, he brought me to the porch
of the house, and he measured each post of the porch, 5 cubits on this side and 5 on that. So he's just measuring now this distance right here. 5 cubits, or about 10 feet. The wall is about 10 feet. Now you notice it's a little thicker over here. And they're picking up this dimension a little bit more than this one right here. And the breadth of the gate was 3 cubits on this side and 3 cubits on that side. The length of the porch was 20 cubits. In other words, 20 cubits wide here, or 40 feet. And the breadth, this distance right here, 11 cubits. Now, when you read about Solomon's temple, there was one difference in regard to this particular building, the temple itself. There's one dimension difference. As far as I could determine, there's only one. And this is it. Now, if you look in the details of Solomon's temple, you'll find that that dimension is 10 cubits instead of 11. Now, that seems rather strange that everything else is the same. You take the Debir or the Holy of Holies, it's 20 cubits cube, and this is 20 by 40. It doesn't look quite like that. The way this is pressed out with this slightly distorted view, but anyway, that's the Hekel or the Holy Place is twice as long as the Debir. But you have 20 cubits for the Debir, 40 for the Hekel, that's 60. And then for the porch, you have 10 in Solomon's temple, making a total of 70. But now, Ezekiel's temple is 71. Now, why 71? I puzzled about that, and I don't know that I know the answer. But I thought, well, now I wonder if this is sort of symbolic of time. And you have 10 plus 20 is 30. And, wait a minute, that's not right. 20 and 40 is 60. And 10, and making 70 or 71. Now, if this represented years and you add a couple of zeros on there, you have either 7,000 or 7,100. I wonder if this has something to do with the fact that the judgment may last 100 years. So you have a 6,000 years, another 1,000 years, which is 7,000, and then 100 after that. Where Solomon's temple, related to a different time, and it was 1 cubit less than that. I don't know if that's what God had in mind at all, but that's the only thing I can come up with is maybe a possibility. And it says it was ascended, and there were pillars by the posts, one on this side and one on that side. Now you see here out in front, the way I have it here, pillars of Joachim and Boaz. Now, nowhere does it tell you how far they are in their exact relationship to the house. You just know that it's out in front. Some researchers have made it a part of the building itself so that it doesn't stick out separately freestanding. I think they were probably freestanding, but then that's neither here nor there, I guess. In Solomon's temple, those were called Joachim and Boaz. And he brought me to the temple and measured the post, 6 cubits broad on the one side and 6 cubits broad on the other side. Now he's come to this point right here. And then the breadth of the entrance is 10 cubits. This cross is 10 cubits. And the sides of the entrance were 5 cubits on the one side and 5 on the other. In other words, there's 5 cubits here, 5 cubits here, 10 there, making a total of 20. Then he measured the length thereof, 40 cubits. That's the Hekel, 40 cubits. And the breadth, 20 cubits, as I had mentioned earlier. Then went he inward and measured each post of the entrance 2 cubits. So now we're up here, you see, and that's only 2 cubits, or about 4 feet. The wall there is only 4 feet. And he measured the length thereof, 20 cubits, and the breadth, 20 cubits, before the temple. And he said unto me, this is the most holy place. It's commonly called the Holy of Holies. The Hebrew word there is Debir, D-E-B-I-R. And then the Greek word for this room here, which we commonly call the Holy Place, is Hekel. And he measured the wall of the house, 6 cubits. So in other words, the wall here, if you move all the way around here, is 6 cubits. And now he mentions the breadth of every side chamber, 4 cubits, round about the house on every side. And the side chambers were one over another, 3 and 30 times, and there were cornices in the wall which belonged to the house for the side chambers round about, that they might have hold therein. Now, a little bit later, I'll show you about this very strange relationship. In fact, maybe I should finish with this and then go on to that. Now, the side chambers are pictured here by these. And there's quite a bit of discussion in some of the researchers' findings about how you get up from one floor to the other. I concluded from putting all the things together that they were winding stairs, because one of the translations indicates that, only other authors will say, well, they didn't know how to make winding stairs back then, and so that couldn't have been. And I just, since the Bible seemed to indicate that that's what it was, that's what I used. I don't know if we come across that here or whether that was back in the Kings or Crosses. All right, so this then is the temple itself, generally what people think of when they're talking about the temple. And this is what it looked like from the front. You never saw a building like that before unless you saw one of my pictures before. Now, most authors will tell you that this is ridiculous. They made a mistake in Chronicles. Because in the book of Chronicles, it says that it was 120 cubits high. Now, any fool would know that it couldn't be 120 cubits high. That's ridiculous. And so usually you'll find it about half that high. So it said that in Chronicles, and so that's what I did. I just put it down on paper. I think I allowed a little bit up at the top for some sort of a roofing arrangement. But otherwise, that's about 120 cubits high, you know, using a scale to the width and so on. Now, we'll see as we go along that there is a basement. That's what this is, only it's not the kind of basement we think of, where you have a room underneath. This is just sort of, we would call it a foundation. The stairs would go up there to that. Here are the two pillars, Jachin and Boaz. These are the side chambers. And there are, what do they call these? We'll come to a little bit later. Anyway, these are wood things that go across the top, whether they're for ornamentation or what, I don't know. And then looking inside, you can see the doorway, which is sort of an accordion type or folding type door, which is described in some detail, going into the holy place. Now we'll look at it as you would see it from the north, looking south. It looks very strange, doesn't it? You've never seen anything like that before. Windows that are mentioned specifically. And now a perspective view. And by the way, all of these perspectives were drawn by Mr. Snook. This is 20 years ago now. Okay, now I think the next thing I'll do is to show you what we've just started reading about here in verse 5. Maybe let's read it and see if you can figure out what it's talking about. Then he measured the wall of the house 6 cubits, or 12 feet. In other words, the wall is 12 feet thick of stone, and the breadth of every side chamber 4 cubits, round about the house on every side, and the side chambers were one over another 3 and 30 times, and there were cornices in the wall which belonged to the house for the side chambers round about, that they might have hold therein. Now, what it's talking about is the support for the various floors. Now, if you were going to build a building like this and you wanted to put on the second and the third floor, you would just, I suppose, jut into the wall of the main building to have support for that. But now this, the house, as it's called, or the temple, is a very, very holy place. And in this particular case, even though it's 12 feet thick, God says this isn't going to be that way. And he puts cornices in the wall which belonged to the house for the side chambers round about, that they might have a hole therein. In other words, that there might be something to hold them up so that they don't fall down. And the side chambers were broader as they wound about higher. Now, usually, if there's a difference in... And so that which was left by the structure of the side chambers that belonged to the house, and between the chambers was a breadth of 20 cubits round about the house on every side, and so on. Now, I think I'll not read any more of that, but when you read the account over in Chronicles and in Kings, you'll find the size, the exact size of each of these floors. Now, we already read that they were 4 cubits, but that's only one dimension.
Now, look what we have here.
This now is the wall, which, of course, goes up 120 cubits, 240 feet, about 24 stories. So that's not continued all the way up. And we start out here now with a wall that has indentations. I think this is 4 cubits wide this way. This is 5, and this is 6. That's one dimension. The other dimension is 4. And you remember the cornice that holds up the wall? Yeah, I put in a little cornice there, or a little support, fastened to the wall, but not going into the wall. And this is what is called the basement. You know, 12 feet of a stone there for the foundation or the main support. All right, now we get into other matters, starting here about verse 12. And maybe I ought to pause there now and see if you're thoroughly confused or if you could understand this as we went along. Do we have any questions thus far? Yes, sir. Pardon? No, they didn't. I don't think they used concrete back then. Maybe they did, but it's a stone blocks, huge blocks. Pardon? Quarried, yes, quarried stone. Yes. There's no mention of what is inside. As far as the Bible describes, it's just a hollow shaft. However, the Bible does mention the upper rooms, which apparently are not referring to those 90 rooms, the little side chambers. And so I concluded, whether rightly or wrongly, that there were other floors, other stories in that porch. But the Bible, just gives you the general outline. It doesn't give you the specifics sometimes. It mentions the treasuries in the Lord's house in some place. And I thought that maybe that's where they had kept some of the treasures. But I don't know. Yes, over here. No, not that I'm aware of. Any other comments or questions? That's right.
And all of them are identical.
All identical.
Are they connected by?
No, we'll show the interrelationship as we go a little bit further along. Yeah. I probably looked at it way back when, but I don't remember now. The nearest one I saw was in one of the Bibles that I have, and I've forgotten now which Bible. Oh, it seems to me the Living Bible has a drawing, which is nearer than most as far as the general appearance is concerned. I think that was it. Generally, I don't recommend a Living Bible, but if I recall, and I've not looked at it for years, but as I recall, it seemed to me they did have the tower or the porch more in proportion to what I mentioned here. Where was the exact location of this temple? Well, of course, it's not built yet. Solomon built his on Mount Moriah, and the temple building itself was there. However, the other buildings, there are many, many buildings that are described here, most of those did not exist back at that time. They had the temple building, which is essentially the same, but not exactly the same as this. And the inner court, the outer court, the gates, were all different from what this is. Well, it's not representing, it's just God's temple on earth. It's just talking about a physical building. I call it that. The Bible doesn't call it that. As far as the time is concerned, it would seem it was either during the millennium or during the Great White Throne period that he is carried forward in vision to see this. And, of course, when he gets there, it's already built. It's already constructed. Yes. Well, I think all I can do is guess. Some have made some comments about this. I would suspect they represent the Father and the Son. And there's some maybe slight indication in that in connection with the names, Joachim and Boaz. Yes.
I studied that 20 years ago, but I don't recall now specifically. I've forgotten. Boaz, of course, was the name of David's, is it grandfather or great-grandfather? Pardon, grandfather? Well, anyway, whatever he was. Well, let's see. Boaz, pardon? Yes. And begat, Boaz begat, what? Obed, who was the father of David the king. I think it says something like that. All right, anything else before we go on? Yes.
These two sons
of his even the
right? We have the
approach one. Yes.
And they grow
up high. Well, I've forgotten the height right now. I don't know if it's mentioned specifically the height. No, that's just how many there were. Well, it goes all the way around. We'll see. Well, I showed you already. I can go back and show you again. Okay, the side chambers are marked one. You know, go all the way around on three sides. All right, now back to our text. Verse 12, and the building that was before the separate place at the side toward the west was 70 cubits broad, and the wall of the building was 5 cubits thick round about, and the length thereof 90 cubits. Now, I'm not going to show you a drawing of this at this point, but I want you to keep this in mind. This is talking now about a building that's behind the temple building. Then he makes some other measurements here relating to that particular building, and in verse about 15, 16, he talks about some windows, and he describes about the cherubim and the palm trees that are, what would you say, engraved in the wood. And verse 21, the temple, the jambs were squared, the face of the sanctuary had an appearance such as is the appearance. I'm not sure what he means like that. I guess he's just saying, well, you know, it had a particular appearance, rather a unique one. Then in verse 22, he talks about an altar, apparently the altar of incense inside. And then verse 23, and the temple and the sanctuary had two doors. And he's describing now the door going from the porch into the holy place. And each door has two leaves. And I showed that to you there in one place. I said it was sort of accordion-type drawer, a door. With, of course, only two leaves rather than many leaves. And verse 25, and there were made on them, on the doors of the temple, cherubim and palm trees, like as were made upon the walls. So they engraved then in the wood the appearance of palm trees and cherubim. And there were thick beams of wood upon the face of the porch without. Now, I showed you there in the one place some sort of horizontal beams or boards and so forth. And it says there were beams, so that meant that there was more than one. I don't think it mentions particularly three. It could be there are only two. And then he mentions the narrow windows and the palm trees and so forth. All right, that's all we'll then cover there.